In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy Friday, everybody.
Yay!
Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I cover tech. And the first thing I remember ever geeking about was the Super Friends.
I'm Brian Truitt, film critic and entertainment writer, and I think the first official thing I geeked out for was Star Wars.
I'm Kelly Lawler, TV critic, and the first thing I ever geeked out about was Charmed. I had a Charmed calendar.
We are so old.
Oh, I'm like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino or Torino or whatever that one thing was. I'm going to get you on the lawn.
It's old enough to be rebooted.
I'm shaking my cane at Kelly right now. If you're new to the show, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership come out every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, leave us a rating and a review. If you do, we'll give you a shout-out on the podcast. Plus, if you give us 5 stars, we'll read your review out loud, which means you're going to be super famous. Don't forget, you can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. You can also email us to mothershippod@usatoday.com. We love hearing your ideas. We've even made changes to the podcast just because of you. Please tell us what you want. We're willing to do whatever you guys want, more or less. Within reason.
I was about to say.
We're going to review that.
We're going to go to our bosses first.
Yeah.
And the legal department.
Yeah. A couple hurdles to cover, but for the most part. This week marks the start of the nerdiest gathering of all things nerdy. Basically the Super Bowl for nerddom, Comic-Con. Fans from all over the world head to San Diego to geek out over costumes, comics, TV shows, movies. Pretty much anything remotely nerdy will be there. By the time you're hearing this, which will be Friday, Brian Truitt will be in San Diego.
Sleep deprived and running around like a chicken with my head cut off.
Yeah, or waiting in a long line, maybe.
I don't do lines, man.
He's too important for lines.
I'll be tired, but I ain't doing lines.
Clearly. So he's going to report on pretty much everything at Comic-Con. You can read all this stuff at life.usatoday.com. But with Comic-Con happening these next few days, we wanted to take an opportunity to check in on geek culture. And there's no better person to bring on the show to talk with us than our special guest. She's the soon-to-be deputy editor for IO9, a blog from Gizmodo that covers pop sci-fi, fantasy, tech, and more. She also blogs about all sorts of nerdy stuff on the site that she founded called The Nerdy Bird. Please welcome Jill Pantozzi, who joins us from New York. Thanks so much for calling in. It's great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So on your blog, you said that you were a nerd before you even knew what that meant. What do you mean by that?
Well, my mom was a big fan of the original Star Trek, and Star Trek was a thing that was just around a lot when I was younger. And so I started liking those nerdy things, sci-fi mostly. And it wasn't until a few years into school that I realized that not everybody liked those sort of things. and so I didn't actually have like a frame of reference for what a nerd was until a few years into school. And then people said, oh, that's weird. Why do you like that?
So what's kind of the nerdiest thing about you, if you had to pick one thing?
Oh, if I had to pick one, I would probably say my Jurassic Park tattoo.
Nice.
Very nice.
It's three of the dinosaurs. It's a very pretty design. It's three of the dinosaurs, and then it has a little banner that says, "Dinosaurs eat man, woman inherits the earth."
Nice. So what's some of the stuff that you're currently geeking over right now?
Oh, the 12 Monkeys finale, the TV show 12 Monkeys, just wrapped up. Four seasons and went out with a huge bang. It was amazing. That show is fantastic. If anybody hasn't watched it yet, you're doing yourself a disservice. I know everyone was kind of weird about it when it first started because it was, you know, a TV show based on the movie and all this stuff, but it actually went in a completely different direction from the film and turned out to be a really, really fantastic sci-fi show. And then also the new She-Ra that we've seen some new images of, which I'm really excited about. That one's going to be on Netflix. And, you know, growing up, I was a She-Ra fan, of course. And I think it looks really cool. And I can't wait for a new generation to enjoy it.
Very nice. Okay, let's get to the main topic now. So we had this talk on the podcast a while back. when we were discussing Ready Player One, just talking about toxic fandom. So we wanted to dig in a little deeper to that and ask a really tough question, which is, has geek culture gotten so toxic to the point that we just need to kill it off for its own sake? Or does it just need a really long break? Or are there other solutions out there to fix this? It's obviously something that's kind of tough to talk about because, you know, we all have jobs that are kind of related to geek culture. So clearly it wouldn't be great if it died off because then we'd be looking for work. But we still have to talk about it because we have a lot of crazy stuff happening, like fans of Star Wars who want to remake The Last Jedi. And
fans.
Yeah, quote unquote, fans. Yeah, yeah. You know, you have creators and actors, directors who are getting hounded on Twitter and other places over the stuff they make. Or you even have something as simple as like a new show's announced or new movie's announced and everyone is just snarky and really negative about it because for whatever reason. It's supposed to be like an awesome time to enjoy this stuff. And clearly there are a lot of miserable people, it seems. So we're going to talk about what's going on. But first, let's kind of get a state of geek culture. So we'll start with Jill. If you had a scale from 1 to 10, with 1 being very unhealthy and 10 being really healthy, where would you rank geek culture right now?
Oh, God. we are at a pretty bad time. 3?
Okay. What would you, why would you go with 3?
I don't know. I just feel like we're almost at like a fever pitch in this kind of thing that kind of started a few years back and it just keeps getting worse.
Kelly, what about you?
I also said 3. And the only positives there are exclusively for the fans of Wynonna Earp and Billions.
Brian, you went way off scale.
Negative 2. Can we go negative? Because everybody else is. it's a dad joke, right for you, Brett.
Zing.
We got problems, especially like with anything really popular. It's gone. It's been taken from us. I think that's kind of the problem. Is a lot of the stuff that used to be niche isn't niche anymore. It's kind of like out there for the rest of the public to grab. And society's kind of in a bad place right now. So I think society's taken that kind of stuff that used to be niche but is now mainstream and kind of deep-sixed it in many ways.
I went weirdly... This sounds positive.
You're hopeful.
I went with a 6.
We need more people like you then.
But here's why. My reason I call it a 6 is because we have people like us in this room and we have a ton of other people out there that aren't big loudmouths on social media that appreciate this stuff mm-hmm. and enjoy... just the variety of things that are out there that we can consume. And if there's something we don't like, there's something else that we can just readily move on to. And, you know, we're all mature adults too. So if there's something and if there's something we really don't like, we move on. And I think my big thing is I feel like it's very toxic, but I also believe there are a lot of other people out there we're not hearing from that are just normal people that appreciate this stuff. And I feel like we need to hear more of them and less of this other garbage.
Yeah.
But looking specifically at the stuff that we really hate about this, Jill, what are some of your big pet peeves about geek culture right now?
Zack Snyder stands.
Oh, God, yeah.
Release the Snyder cut.
Yeah.
Like, that is one of the biggest thorns in my side right now. I have so many people blocked on Twitter who simply had, like Batman v Superman or Justice League images as their avatars because it was immediately evident what kind of fan they were. And when I say stan, that's the more obsessive, you know, out of control sort of fan, not your everyday, I like Zack Snyder movies. Okay, that's fine. But when you go and you start attacking people because, you know, they didn't like his films in the superhero realm, then that's a whole nother story.
Brian, what's your big pet peeve? Which kind of dovetails into mine, but... Well, I want to hear yours first.
So there's a lot of things that bother me, but my problem is everybody's got a hot take and everybody needs to shut up sometimes. And it's like the same people.
Yes.
The people with the hot take need to shut up sometimes. I think overall, I think people need to listen to each other better and just kind of like and stop talking long enough to listen to everybody. But I think everybody gets, you know, I think it kind of goes into what Jill was saying was you have the people who want, you know, who love Zack Snyder and just, you know, love everything about Batman, his Batman and Superman and that sort of thing. And they don't shut up about it. And then the people who don't like those people, you know, kind of, you know, make fun of the Snyder cut thing. And the, you know, and so they don't really listen to the other people. There's no listening. It's just a bunch of people yelling at each other. And I think that's what we've got also with Star Wars right now. Everybody's just yelling at each other and, you know, giving their own opinions, but not listening to the other person's opinion. So I think that and then, you know, lots of bad hot takes get in there. And I think it just kind of like exacerbates the situation, because if everybody's yelling, then no one's listening. And it's just a bunch of yelling.
Yeah, this gets to my big pet peeve, and this kind of extends everywhere, but I think with geek culture it fits too. I feel like there's a lack of accountability from platforms that host all this stuff, whether it's
from
Reddit,
the tech reporter,
whether it's Reddit or Twitter or Facebook or wherever, where I feel like they have come so late to the party on trying to police this stuff now that it's just out of control. And you know, like especially Twitter. Twitter has been awful with policing this stuff forever. And the problem, I think, boils down to it's two things. I think part of it is they rely on things like algorithms to police all this stuff. And what happens is they don't realize they have people that game those algorithms and screw over people who use the service correctly, and they prop up the people that don't. And then the other problem, I think, is I think they're so afraid to piss off a certain set of people that they go out of their way to try to tiptoe around them when they need to just say, you know what, you're ruining the service, you're out, and that's it, and be done with it. And I think that's the problem. They need to take a hard stand and just figure out what kind of service do you want and what kind of people do you want. And if those people don't fit, then get them the f*** out. And that's it. Done. End of story. Sorry for cursing, Taylor.
I'm usually the one cursing. I'm proud of you, man. I'm usually the one going off.
Kelly.
Yeah, I agree with everything everybody has said. To me, one of the biggest problems, and I think this kind of ends up on the side of people who do want there to be more positivity, is we oftentimes, in our rush to sort of show shock and sometimes humor or annoyance at what a small segment of people on the internet are saying about or doing about Star Wars or Zack Snyder or whatever, we end up signal boosting them. And, you know, I think this came into play specifically with these like Star Wars people who want to remake The Last Jedi with their crowdfunded money.
How much money have they made? Like,
they said that
$2 gazillion.
They said that they have like $20 million pledged.
I can't nod my head hard enough.
Right,
to this
and it's
argument.
Like funny just for me right now to like make that joke. But then at the same time, I'm like, these people just want attention. I think they know they're never going to remake The Last Jedi. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who are like, I hate to say like stupid or idiotic, but you know, there are some people who like maybe think they can. But I think the people
they're stupid or idiotic. I'll plant the flag.
But I do think that some of them just want to ruffle feathers and get people's attention. And actually, I talked when this whole like thing like broke on Twitter, I guess, I saw Rian Johnson, who directed The Last Jedi, retweet them, and then I like and like make a joke. And then I like retweeted him, but I was like, oh God, he signal boosted it. And then he responded to me. He was like, yeah, actually I thought about that, but it was like so absurd I had to point it out. And I was like, I get that, but then at the same time, they wanted to get a rise out of you.
And they did.
And they did. They're a loud minority all on their own. And then sometimes we give them help that we don't really mean to. But, you know, because sometimes it's hard to control our emotions in response to that.
It's a good lesson for everybody, you know, in today's social media age. You know, write your tweet, just pause 10 seconds and think if you should send it.
I had an old editor who would always tell me, don't write a tweet or a Facebook post that you don't want to see on the front page of your newspaper.
Or yeah. Your mom. Or that your mom would be disappointed at.
Exactly.
Yeah. I used to be a social media editor, and when people would ask me about that, I'd say, if you can publish it online, like in the paper, on the website, then you can tweet it. If you're worried that we wouldn't publish it, like maybe ask yourself why you want to tweet it in the first place.
So Jill, like looking bigger picture, because you talked about the Zack Snyder stance as kind of the personal, one of your pet peeves.
Yeah.
But like looking more broadly at geek culture in general, what would you say is the biggest problem? Or are there several big problems? Like what would you point to?
Ooh, well, I think I'd have to go specific to say the racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic fans. Those people are everywhere, obviously, and what's going on in our country right now has sort of raised their voices, but that is the biggest sort of toxic aspect for me, because there's being sort of silly and saying, you know, your opinion about a movie is fact, and then they're saying, well, I don't like this movie because of these people in it. And I think that's where it gets really toxic.
But to me, one of the roots of the problem, and I think that encompasses the toxicity that comes from both like hate of like marginalized people, and then also the other kinds of hate that rolled up in this whole problem. I think it comes from the idea that a lot of the people who are giving this negativity think that art is a product and that fans are consumers. You know, so like when you order something from Amazon and you don't get what you want, you return it, or you like call Amazon customer service and be like, this isn't the pan I ordered.
Right.
You know, like I need the right pan. And that's just not the way art works. Like, you know, like Michelangelo didn't redo, I can't remember any of the stuff he did right now. Did he do the Sistine?
David?
David. Thank you. Michelangelo didn't redo David because of a Twitter fan campaign, right? Like that's just not how it works. And I think we got here for a bunch of different reasons. I think Netflix and like the streaming boom is a part of it because they treat art like content, the way they talk about it, the way they release things. You know, I think unfortunately, sometimes the fact that fan campaigns have worked to influence art is part of it. Even things that we felt like were net goods, like the Veronica Mars Kickstarter or like USA Today's Save Our Shows campaign, which helped bring Timeless back for a second season. I mean, obviously, we liked those things. I love the Veronica Mars movie. Brian loves Timeless, but it makes it
but
seem.
But not enough to piss off, you know, right. To piss on somebody about it.
Right. It just makes it seem like then, oh, so like I can do something by being loud. They were being loud sort of positively. So these people are being loud in like the other state. The other thing I think is that the problem is Hollywood in the way they market these things to super fans. I think about like, remember like before The Dark Tower like totally flamed out, like when Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba were like tweeting the opening lines back and forth to each other. And no one who's never read The Dark Tower is going to understand that. That's not about getting a broad consumer base to go see your movie. That's about like hyping up the super fans. And when you get all that stuff like hand delivered to you, where you get to go to Star Wars Celebration, and when you get first look images of the costumes and the casting news, and when, you know, they all talk about how they grew up reading Spider-Man or whatever, and it just seems like it is made for you. Like, you know, that big first marketing push that's about fans, I think, makes them feel like this stuff is made for them specifically. And if it's made for you, you get to have a say in how it's made.
So I have a quick follow-up question. Do you think the problems that we have would tone down if there was less information about this stuff?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Like if we just had a trailer and then the movie and that's it?
300%.
I don't know. I mean, I think if you think even about the difference between the lead-up to The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, like how much of the internet changed in between those two movies. And, you know, Batman Begins was a really great movie that had a lot of really hype super fans, but Rotten Tomatoes wasn't the biggest thing there, so they weren't like, before The Dark Knight Rises came out, they were like...
It's just a cool Batman film, you know? Right.
They were harassing people who didn't like The Dark Knight Rises, so it couldn't get its special 100% Rotten Tomato score, you know?
So, Jill, what do you think? Do you think that if we had less information about this kind of stuff, that a lot of the toxicity we would see would go down, or does it even matter?
I think now it doesn't matter because I don't think we can plug that back up. You know what I mean? If we kept at a certain level, that might have been something, but I don't think that we can shift back to holding back more. Like, we get teasers for teaser trailers now that are like 10 seconds. And, you know, it drives me out of my mind because people then post it and it's not even the real trailer. And we have to do the same thing the next day, you know? And I think because people watch it, because people post about it, the studios, they're just going to keep doing it. So there's no way to plug that back up.
Well, and also, too, I think what we see of just like, you know, not only the kind of the information, but people talking about it used to be on like, you know, LiveJournal or, you know, forums and Reddits and, you know, stuff I wasn't a part of and didn't want to be a part of because it was a bunch of like people yelling at each other in like little corners of the internet. Now the internet is just one big place to yell at each other.
Right. And I even think like when it was like nicheified like that, it was still a little more positive. I mean, my sister met her wife on BuffyWorld.com.
Well, and people who knew each other can bust each other's chops.
Right.
So they can't, I mean, they know each other of that. So there's an understanding of like, you don't really mean what you say. You're just kind of, we're buds and we're kind of busting each other's chops. This is like somebody in Colorado talking to somebody in Florida flaming each other. They don't know each other. So they're like, they're taken out of context. They're just, you know, they're pissed off.
And when there's also more people in the mix, when even if you look at like the difference of the discourse on like, say, Tumblr or something like, or like the closed platforms, it's just so much harder to be obnoxious when the pool is smaller or when you have less technological capabilities to do so. I mean, Instagram didn't have a harassment problem for a long time. They're starting to, but like I think it's just because it's getting bigger and bigger. but there's no links. You know what I mean? There's no back and forth. You can comment on one photo or one video, or you can send people direct messages.
And I think they have tools to like kind of police a little better.
They
some
do.
Of the, some of the experience you have on Instagram
yeah.
compared to some other stuff. So Jill, is there a specific example that you can think of where you first realized that geek culture was having like a serious problem?
Yes. Years ago, I started a comic book column at Newsarama. It was my first one on the site for this column, and I wrote about how DC Comics should get Aquaman a new costume that is more in line with Olympic swimmers, you know, and the kind of sleek things they have, right? And it was a little tongue-in-cheek. It was just like, you know, this is never going to happen, obviously, but just, you know, it would be interesting to, you know, they're always trying to go so realistic. Well, that would be more realistic, right? And one of the first comments I got was calling me the C word.
Oh, my God.
Over a comic book costume. And I was like, wow, okay, really? That's where we're at. Okay, I see. And that was it. And it was a rude awakening, to be sure, but that was that, yeah.
Oh, my God. Brian, what was your first point where you felt like there was a problem?
Well, I think all the Gamergate stuff, and you can probably speak better to this because you were probably kind of more into it. But, you know, I think I was on the outside of it because I'm not really a gamer per se. But I think, you know, you could see how much misogyny there was, how much sexism was being railed at. Twitter's like one big place for the alt-right to kind of go crazy on. And their voices lead the charge, you know, in a weird sort of way. So I think that gets into other things that, you know, gets infested into Christopher Nolan fans, gets infested into Zack Snyder and Star Wars. And, you know, and like Jill said, I mean, kind of you have bullies and, you know, mean people kind of coming out of the woodwork because they've gotten a voice because of these other things. And they've been emboldened to, like, say what they mean to anything. To anybody, you know, no matter, you know, if they disagree with them, they're going to put a comment on an article. I don't know why anybody still has comments on articles anymore. I don't
know
why. Well,
Twitter's the new comment section.
Exactly. Now. I don't know why we have it. I don't know why, like, other people have it because, it's, you know, it's just a cesspool.
Yeah. I go back even further. I think the first time I thought of it was the launch of Mass Effect 3, which was in 2012. So this is like the third game in the Mass Effect trilogy. And there was a ton of controversy around it because of the ending. I'm sorry if you haven't played the game yet, but I'm going to spoil it right now.
I mean, it's from 2012, guys.
I know. Just in case there's two people that haven't played it yet and they want to play it. So Commander Shepard, the lead character in the game, he gets to the end of the game and he's about to stop this kind of machine alien race from destroying humanity, organic life.
Yeah.
So he gets to this point where he has like a handful of choices. He can either destroy all the Reapers, all the other synthetic life. He can either copy them and create this new AI, or he can kind of something bringing together organic life and robots, stuff like that, something like that. But the endings that you saw varied depending on the kind of progress you made in the game. So depending on how far along you got, you may get one of the endings, you may get all three, or you may get a handful. It just all depended on how invested you were in the experience. When I played it, I only got one ending, which was you have to destroy everything or the Reapers win. So I was like, well, I don't know what else to do. So, but it pissed off a lot of people because they had spent three games making all these choices and they felt like they wanted the ending that they felt they were expecting and they didn't get it and they got really angry. And I still remember the petitions of people that were like, change the ending of the game.
And then they did.
And they came out with an extended version of the game, an expansion, which was basically like they expanded on the ending and they added another option. And to me, it was the first case of you caved into fans because they didn't appreciate the artistic direction of your game. And you decided, well, we'll just kind of tweak the ending a little bit to make you happy. I honestly think that's kind of where it started in a way, because it's just a case of, yeah, an online mob coming through and getting so angry, some outlets kind of piggybacking on that, and then they kind of just cave. And I think that's where a lot of fans feel like entitled, and they also feel like some fans can put enough pressure to change stuff like that. That's why you see campaigns for like the Last Jedi movie and all this other stuff.
People need to stop taking this stuff so personally. These are fictional characters. Fictional characters. Let it go. If you don't like the ending, fine. Go read something else. If you go get halfway through a book, don't like how it's going, stop reading or stop watching the movie or just kind of move on. I mean, it's not, these things aren't real life. It's almost like the old soap operas where people thought that, like, you know, Dallas was happening in real life or Bold and the Beautiful. You know, it's just like they got so wrapped up in everybody's drama that they stopped seeing these people as actors and just saw them as their characters. And I think that is now everything. We don't see Jason Momoa, the dude. We just see Aquaman now. We don't think of Mark Hamill as like a dude who's a cool guy and everything. A lot of people just see him as Luke Skywalker, and they want Luke Skywalker to be this person for them. And it's not. It's Mark Hamill. I think people totally lost their minds a little bit because they can't discern the fictional from the real.
I'll take a personal example myself. There's a fine line between saying I really didn't like Batman v Superman and picketing Warner Brothers or complaining to them on Twitter because they didn't give me the ending I wanted.
Well, it's so interesting what you were talking about with Mass Effect, and you were saying how it was like an online mob, and it made me think of George R. R. Martin has talked about how he got a lot of hate mail after the third Game of Thrones book came out, A Storm of Swords, which is where the Red Wedding is. And when I read that, like, in high school, I threw the book across the room.
But then you moved on.
But right. And then later I picked it back up again.
Yeah.
I went to my dad who, like, I had told me to read the books, and I was like, I can't believe that happened. And he was like, the Starks were never very good at the game anyway.
Nice.
Great, wow. Great advice, Dad. Great advice.
Wow.
But I mean, anyway, the point is that he got all that hate mail, right? And it didn't affect anything. And if it had, Game of Thrones wouldn't be Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I almost think that it's this online thing. And there's been a lot of great stuff that's happened because we have easier ways to communicate and marginalized people get to have voices online. You know, like, we talk more about, I think, for example, like, diversity in pop culture is a big push because people online are talking about it who you would never hear from before. And, you know, like, Save Timeless online was a big deal. And, like, when Roswell on the WB and UPN back in the day was on the verge of cancellation every season and we sent Tabasco sauce to them, nothing happened. You know what I mean? But voting in an online poll, wow, like, that's something different. But then at the same time, it also creates a much easier outlet for that hate, that same hate mail. And it sounds louder because, you know, we are on the internet so much we get bombarded by it.
Plus you have smartphones, you're getting those notifications,
right?
Dinging your phone all the time.
Like, all we do is look at the internet, and we look to it for our news, for entertainment. You know, we look to it to talk to our family, and then that becomes the world. And so if people are mad online, then everybody must be mad, and then we got to change the ending to Mass Effect.
Exactly. So what was your first kind of feeling that there was a problem?
I'm also going back to Gamergate, which is something that I didn't know much about until I read this story by Zoe Quinn, who was the initial target of Gamergate, called Five Things I Learned as the Internet's Most Hated Person, which is you can Google it, you can read it, it's pretty horrifying. So then I got kind of like in a negative obsession way, obsessed with reading about Gamergate and finding out what was going on and being horrified by it. But then I also think, so that was sort of like the first thing, but I think it also, another step in this direction happened when Age of Ultron came out, because I think there was this weird backlash to it in a number of different ways, and it all got kind of meshed together online, and then like Joss Whedon quit Twitter, and then he went on that whole apology tour about how much he hated the movie and how he hated doing it and hated himself, and it all just kind of fed into this machine of negativity about it. And I just feel like that was kind of a turning point. You know, think about like how we, like the three of us, also hi Jill, on this podcast, like that was sort of the last time that we got like so hyped for a Marvel movie beforehand without like thinking about like the downsides and everything. And It just felt like a big turning point for me in a bad direction.
Mm-hmm. So, Jill, you know, obviously all of us, our jobs have geek culture wrapped in it in some form. But Jill, for you, have you ever gotten to the point where you felt like, I'm done with this, I don't want to write about this stuff, I don't want to cover this stuff, I'm out?
Not really. I mean, I got into this business for a reason, you know. I went to school for journalism. I could have gone and done regular journalism.
Yeah.
But I found out that geek journalism was a thing, and I said, that's what I need to do because I love it. And no matter what, you know, problems there are surrounding it, I still think all this stuff is for people to enjoy. And that's sort of the base thing. And that's why I keep doing it, because I personally enjoy it. I think the only thing I've done over the course of the last several years is stop using Facebook normally. You know, I mean, we kind of all have to use it for work, but I'm not on it anymore like I used to be.
It's gotten like to that point where it's just like, I could go on social media, or I could read a book or watch a movie or binge a show or play a board game with my daughter or literally do anything else. And I would rather do that literally anything else, because it's just like, so my social media feed is just like Star Wars sucks and or is awesome. You know, this, you know, other things are sucks and or is awesome. It's like this weird roller coaster. And I'm just like, I don't want to get on it.
I guess this is one of the cool things about having kids, because I'm starting to see them become fans of things. And it's nice because it's the pure, I love this, and they just are consumed by it, and that's it. And it's none of the something in this plot is terrible, or I don't like this costume, or I don't like this actor for this role. Mm-hmm. It's just they purely love it all. So I think that's given me hope as far as like enjoying this stuff. And I feel like that's kind of tailored my experience too, where I just kind of focus on the people and the experiences and the things that are bring out the best of this stuff, and I just get rid of the other stuff. In fact, if I see people complaining about something, it makes me want to support it even more. I feel like that's the way to counter it, is like, if it's something that, you know, like The Last Jedi, I'll buy anything The Last Jedi now if that,
right.
you know, if that means they keep going with it. So, Kelly, what about you?
I have to say that I was really disheartened with all the, like, Last Jedi backlash, like, especially right afterwards in December, because I really loved it, and I felt like it was a very moving experience for me personally, also because it was Carrie Fisher's last movie, because I loved the direction they took it in, like, because I had said on this podcast for, like, literally years about how much I wanted Star Wars to be about how anyone can be a hero, and then it was that, which I suppose is in and of itself my own, like, wanting it to be the way I want it to be, but...
Yeah, but the difference is, let's say it didn't go that way.
Yeah.
You're not going to go on Twitter and talk to Rian Johnson and say, change the movie. I'm making my own.
That is true.
Well, I absolutely hated the Carrie Fisher, Mary Poppins moment. I mean, that took me out of that movie, and I couldn't stand that moment. Did it ruin the movie for me? No.
Yeah.
I think certain people can look at something as a piece of art, but just kind of like the overall thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people just can't manage that.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to kind of look at arguments, both kind of strong arguments in favor of killing off geek culture or against it. So, Jill, let me start with you. What's your strongest argument in favor of just killing it off?
Oh, I'm going to be the difficult one because I don't think we should kill it off at all.
I'm in agreement. I kind of compare it to geek culture has a virus that we need to get rid of.
Yeah, there's some very specific problems. Yeah, but overall, I don't think we should get rid of it.
So if you had to pick an argument against killing it, how would you describe that?
I would say, you know, when I think of geek culture, I think of the good stuff. I think of cosplay, and I think of amazing fan art and fan fiction. I think of people becoming friends because of a piece of art, you know? All of this is so good and can be so healthy, and you know, the fiction that we consume really speaks to people. And that's what creators want, right? They want us to feel something from their work. And things out there in geek culture help people every day. And so that's the kind of thing that I look towards. And that's why we need to keep it.
Geek culture also has always been about healthy debate, because that's part of the fun. Like with Star Trek, it's about who's the best captain. If it's like superheroes, it's who's the strongest, who's the fastest, who would beat who in a fight, blah, blah, blah. But those kind of debates are also part of it because it's just fun. It's like using your imagination, and you're having a good-hearted debate and not just screaming your head off, like Brian said.
But the healthy debates aren't happening.
Yeah. Although I will say, not just as a plug, but also just because it's been very interesting, we started a Facebook group about television here at USA Today called Yes, I'm Still Watching. Anyway, we had braced ourselves for the negativity with like moderating and, you know, like locking down our Facebook accounts in case of any like bad people trying to like dox us or whatever. And it's been so fun and lighthearted, and people are coming up with this kind of like that kind of debate that Brett was just talking about. Like, what's a show that you really, it got bad, but you like stayed till the end? You know what I mean? Or, you know, what should I watch now that I finished Breaking Bad, or all that kind of stuff? And I will say, I definitely feel like it helps that the median is probably a little bit older because it's Facebook. So I feel like we have a lot of Gen Xers and baby boomers on there. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. and so that is really, really heartening to see. You know, it's just like we haven't really had to. We were ready to like moderate the out of it. Sorry, Taylor. And instead, it's just been fun to watch people play.
So I think there needs to be like a repeal and a replace. I'm making jokes.
Seventh grade
here,
social studies.
No, we're
yes.
kidding. We're kidding.
But I think in a way it does need to die to live, because I think it needs to get pulled back. I think, you know, it needs to kind of go back to the niche a little bit about people in their tribes and kind of smaller tribes, you know, finding what they love and kind of like fostering discussion and everything, because I think anything that's mainstream right now is just par for the course to kind of get dumped on and to get toxic. I think Star Wars needs to go away for at least 6 months. Just go quiet. Everybody stop talking about Star Wars for like 6 months. You know, you mentioned, Brett, you mentioned studios, and I think they're not going to stop. because they just see dollar signs and the business plan. And no matter what people are saying, good or bad, people are talking about your stuff. So that's all they care about. But I think, you know, I'm picking on Star Wars right now. But I think if Star Wars just went away for like 8 months, we'd love it so much more when it came back. Look at Force Awakens. We love the shit out of that movie. But it's just like we love that movie so much because we hadn't seen anything for such a long time because it was absent from our lives. It's not absent from our lives. You know, if things just kind of went away for a while, if we just stopped talking about it for a little bit, you know, I think we'd love it a lot more.
This piggybacks a little bit on Kelly, and this gets to like fixing this stuff. I think one of the ways to fix it is we need to start focusing more on the positive voices, and like Jill talked about, the things about geek culture that are really cool, and like tamp down on the stuff like I'm tired of seeing outlets report about another petition to do something within geek culture, especially if it's like there have 10 people that have supported it and that's it. The fact that it's just like, oh God, someone wants to recreate something, who cares? Like if it's not like of value or if there's a considerable group of people supporting it, then we don't need to hear about it. I think we need to get away from elevating these voices of a small number of people who are just very loud and very negative and not let that overtake what I think is the majority of people who view this a lot more positively.
But I think the problem is, though, there's so many people want to see that negativity than something like positive. It's just the way that's where we are now.
OK, Jill, we're going to wrap it up with you. So let's say you're a doctor and geek culture is your patient. How are you treating geek culture?
Oh, God. Can we give people empathy classes?
Hey, absolutely. That's fine by me.
I think that's one of the biggest problems is that people forget that other people are people, you know, like there are the people out there who are specifically vicious because they want to be mean. And that's a whole other can of worms. But I think we just because we're so online all the time, we forget. You know, and people say this a lot, but we forget that there's another human being on the receiving end of our comments. You know, like, you know, I think a lot of the people who grew up as geeks got bullied for being geeks. And it's something that has stuck with them and hits a nerve every time, you know, someone tries to tell them that what they like isn't good, you know, and I think it brings up these sort of these past, you know, memories that are bad for them. But being able to not say, you know what, I understand that you're, you know, a person just like me, you have your opinions and we can just differ without going into this, you know, vitriol. It's really hard. And I think we say like everybody has to do their part, right? The people who are in positions of power need to do, I don't want them quote tweeting people and saying, don't do this, you know, because like you said before, Kelly, that kind of gives them more attention. Mm-hmm. But I think if something's going around in the atmosphere, right, that everybody's talking about, oh, you know, this negative stuff with Kelly Marie Tran from Star Wars, for these famous actors, for these famous directors to say, this kind of behavior isn't acceptable to us, you know, and sort of put their own thought on that out there, that maybe might give these people a little pause and saying, wait, am I acting like that? Am I being a jerk to other people? And it's not only on them, of course. It's not, like I said, it's on all of us. But I think those people in positions of power who people look up to, you know, that can play a big role.
So Dr. Truitt, what is your prescription for geek culture? How would you solve this or cure this or whatever?
Free trip to Hawaii. 6 months to a year. Just go away. Just go away for a while. And I think people just need to step back, count to 6 months, and just like, let it go. This is just fiction. These are just entertainment. This is supposed to be escapes. This is not supposed to be do or die, you know, life or death kind of stuff. This is the stuff that's supposed to be fun. If it ain't fun, go do something else.
Yeah.
You know, go play flag football or ultimate frisbee or do something else for a little bit and come back to it. I think everybody just needs to like turn off their computer for like 5 minutes a day and just kind of go do something, you know, go outside for a little bit. It's like the kids
outside.
I'm an avid indoorsman myself. Go make a Lego set or something. Play with your kid, something else, but don't get online.
Dr. Lawler, what would your prescription
day. I should put it in a medically induced coma. It's an imperfect metaphor, but I like felt like it was right there for me.
I got it.
But I agree. I agree with what Brian was saying. And I think I had this thing that I can no longer really do because I have to watch TV for a living now and I don't always get to decide what I watch. But for a while, I was trying not to watch any shows that don't bring me joy. Because, you know, after like sticking around with Walking Dead for so long, I was just like, this isn't fun for me anymore. This is like, this is a chore. And then it was actual work. So that's why I had to stay with it. But I think that you could apply that concept to the sort of external parts of the stuff that you like. So if talking about Star Wars online or talking about whatever online doesn't bring you joy, like, don't do it. Or if you want to be make jokes about people trying to remake The Last Jedi, I think you should bring that to the DMs. There's a lot of stuff that we should all bring to the DMs and kind of bring stuff back to the way it used to be with forums, where it was a smaller group of people who everyone knew was respectful. Because if, for example, Film Twitter had not jumped on that and signal boosted it, maybe Rian Johnson wouldn't have seen it. Maybe other people wouldn't have seen it. Maybe it wouldn't have trended. Maybe it would have gotten however many thousands of retweets. If we'd all just made fun of them privately, to be very honest. And I think that's the one thing. I think Twitter is really fun, and I think it's great for like being able to meet people and network with people and have those conversations. And it's great sometimes where you have a conversation where other people can jump in. But sometimes there's stuff that's just for you and your friends. And I think that would do a bunch. It's like kind of a compromise. You don't have to log off, but just do it in a safe space.
I don't know. Logging off is fun, though.
I mean, I do like logging off, and I will highly recommend. I try not to go on the internet on the weekends, and it's amazing.
Yeah, same. Same.
Oh, it's all there when you get back.
Yep.
It's all there.
Never goes anywhere.
So I kind of look at all this toxic stuff as a virus. So I would look at giving geek culture maybe some kind of vaccine or antibiotic.
Ooh.
To boost the empathy cells and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That way that, you know, gets better. You know, you have your trolls that are like passionate fans, but I think you also just have people that just like to get people pissed off and mm-hmm. riled up and like
fans.
Just, you want attention.
Quote.
So
yeah.
I think it comes across a lot of ways. I think you need people that have to have more empathy. I think you need to have platforms that have more tools in place so that you can kind of tailor your experience to something that's enjoyable and you're not having to deal with just garbage constantly. And, you know, honestly, I think that's really where it is. Like, I don't really put a lot of this on the people that create this stuff. This is what they're creating, and either you embrace it or you don't. And
that's not their fault at all.
And they should be able to have an experience where they can just share what they do. And if people don't like it, they don't like it. And if they do, they do. You know, I remember the story recently about the actor who played Jar Jar Binks. And mm-hmm. how he talked about he was thinking about suicide after, you know, the Phantom Menace. Yeah. And I just you feel awful because it's like this poor guy just, you know, was happy to be in Star Wars and. You have a lot of jerks who ruined it for him, basically.
And then there's, like, you hear artists, like, the director of I Kill Giants, that movie, saw, like, a really negative review, and then he and the, like, reviewer just, like, talked it out over one day. And there is this, like, criticism can help people. There is it does have its place in the sort of the system because, you know, not everyone makes their greatest thing the first time. People learn and grow. So it's helpful if we could figure out how to do that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's okay to disagree with things and it's okay to not like stuff and even hate stuff and all that. But you got to have some understanding of just being a little more sympathetic to the people making this stuff and just don't be an a-hole, basically. I mean, it's just comes down to that, honestly. Okay, listeners, before we go, we want to hear from you. Do you think geek culture needs to go away? Do you just want a very long break from it? What are your thoughts? Let us know on Twitter. Our handle is @MothershipPod. You can also tweet at us directly. I'm @BrettMolina23.
I'm @BrianTruitt.
And I'm @KLawls, KLAWLS.
And you can find Jill on Twitter @JillPantozzi, and you can check out her work at io9.gizmo.com or at thenerdybird.com. Jill, thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate having you.
Thank you so much, guys. I had fun. Have fun at con, Brian.
All right, we'll do. Thanks.
That'll do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Special thanks again to Jill for joining us. Also, thanks to our producer, Taylor Macon, the true pilot of the Mothership. If you like what you heard today and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to The Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, leave us a rating or a review because you'll be our best friend forever and we'll read your stuff on air and it'll be awesome and you'll be famous. Don't forget us when you get big, though. You can also find us on Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast. Next week, we're taking a little vacation, so there will be no new episode from us, but we'll be back the first week of August. Meanwhile, Kelly won't be here. Kelly, do you want to tell us what's going on?
I'm very sorry, but I need to take an escape pod from the Mothership away for about a month. I'm going to be in Los Angeles for the Television Critics Association press tour. which is kind of like Comic-Con without fans. It's when they get a bunch of TV journalists in a room and they kind of parade talent and creators in front of them over and over again for 2 weeks straight. So I will have lots of stories about new fall shows, about stuff on Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Facebook Watch is making an appearance, Apple is making an appearance, so maybe we'll learn a little bit about like what the heck they're doing. But I will be back the last week of August, and I'll have many stories to tell.
If there's any breaking news about Doctor Who or Buffy or Game of Thrones or anything like that, just keep it in your pocket until like September-ish, and then I think we'll be good.
Oh, I'll have lots of things to say about Doctor Who, Brett.
Excellent. All right, until then, nerds out.
Bye. Later.